look at our top stories this hour. Iran's foreign minister slams the U.S. president's anti-Tehran remarks, saying Washington cannot impose its one-sided views on others through accusations and sanctions. The Russian president issues a decree to speed up citizenship for all Ukrainians. Kiev says the decision is proof of, quote, Putin's aggressive appetite. Also, the Tunisian opposition renews calls for a boycott of the referendum on the country's new constitution, saying it is illegal and aims to legitimize a coup. Thank you for joining us. Iran's foreign minister says the U.S. cannot impose its one-sided views on others through accusations and sanctions, stressing that diplomacy is not a one-way street. Hossein Amir Abdollahian was reacting to U.S. President Joe Biden's latest anti-Iran remarks. Biden said the U.S. will continue to increase diplomatic and economic pressure until Iran returns to compliance with the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. Iran's foreign minister said if the window of diplomacy is still open on the deal, it's because of Iran's dynamic initiatives. He added that an agreement on reviving the JCPOA needs U.S.'s acceptance of realities, flexibility, and initiatives. Iran and the U.S. held their latest round of indirect talks on the revival of the deal and removal of anti-Iran sanctions in the Qatari capital late last month. The Doha talks were held as an extension of previous rounds of negotiations, which were stalled in March over what Tehran called Washington's excessive demands. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian is in Italy for an official visit. During his first day in Rome, he met with his Italian counterpart, representatives of the business community, and Iranians residing in the country. Max Civilli reports from Rome.
On Monday, Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian landed in the Italian capital for a two-day visit to Italy. Amir Abdollahian's first meeting was at Italy's foreign ministry, where he met his counterpart Luigi Di Maio to discuss bilateral relations and recent geopolitical developments. Di Maio expressed satisfaction over the resumption of indirect talks between Washington and Tehran over the fate of a 2015 deal. The Iranian minister also stressed the importance of reaching a good, lasting agreement that would see Iran take full economic benefit from the historic agreement, officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Iran's top diplomat also stated that Tehran is interested in having its natural share in the energy market and thereby helping the international community. His remarks came at a time when the global market is facing high oil prices due to the Western sanctions on Russia for its war on Ukraine. Over the past years, Italy, like other European countries, has lacked an influential role on Iran's most crucial international issues. According to analysts, the choice to maintain a low profile on Iran was driven by the hesitation of Rome in taking a confrontational stand towards the US.
Italy has been playing a diminutive role not only on the Iranian file, but on most international scenarios. Rome's geopolitical line seems to be too far aligned to that of the U.S. administration. It only remains to be seen if Italy's foreign minister's commitment to expand bilateral relations with Iran is more than just a generic pledge.
After holding talks with his counterpart, Amir Abdollahian met tens of Italian businessmen operating in Iran at the Iranian ambassador's residence. Here, entrepreneurs expressed their desire to intensify commercial ties. The Italian embassy in Iran has estimated that the trade volume between the two countries dropped from about 5 billion euros in 2017 to 1.2 billion euros in 2019, following the U.S. reimposition of sanctions.
Our economies are complementary. There is no rivalry at all. As a matter of fact, they complete each other. We are going through a highly interesting political phase in Iran. Furthermore, Rome and Tehran share 160 years of sound relations.
Also on Monday, Iran's top diplomat met with representatives of the Iranian community residing in Italy. On Tuesday, the Iranian minister is slated to hold talks with high-ranking prelates at the Vatican. Max Civili, Rome.
U.S. President Joe Biden has written an op-ed for the Washington Post sharing his thoughts on the situation in West Asia, as well as U.S. achievements and plans for this region. However, it is ironic that he says the U.S. has helped with regional problems, like the issues of Palestine, Yemen, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Israel, when it's been part of the problem.
President Biden has almost unlimited ways of communicating with the world, but he opted to pen an article posted online Saturday night by the Washington Post to defend his pending West Asia trip in light of the controversies around it. In the piece, he speaks about many issues, including further integrating Israel into the region, Washington's ties with Riyadh, the Saudi-led war in Yemen, the Iran nuclear deal, and more. While most of the matters mentioned in the article are centered around West Asia, they also seem to share another point. The U.S. itself is either complicit in or directly responsible for the very issues it claims that it is trying to solve.
The U.S. Lies through its teeth without stopping a minute. We've seen the debates and discussions about the comprehensive agreement with Iran, which they had promised to renegotiate, and they seem not to be negotiating in good faith. They're trying to paint themselves as innocent, which of course they are not, and they just had a recent rebuff at the G20 meeting in Indonesia, where Mr. Blinken refused to sit down with the leaders of all these states.
Saudi Arabia, infamous for its violations of human rights and under widespread criticism for its bloody war on Yemen as well as the killing of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, is a focal point of Biden's West Asia tour. But despite this, the U.S. president's framing of the Saudi relationship appeared particularly defensive. During his election campaign, Biden had pledged of making Saudi Arabia a pariah for its crime. But now he has ironically claimed that ties with Riyadh help promote the U.S.'s foreign policy ambitions. Similar to the other issues, the U.S. president also tried to take fault away from his administration in regard to the Iran nuclear program file by putting the blame on Iran. Biden also stated his readiness to further pressure Tehran despite Tehran's readiness to return to the deal, and this too sheds light on the U.S.'s ironical foreign policy.
The U.S. President Joe Biden's op-ed raises one immediate question: why did he feel there was a need to write one in the first place? Nevertheless, it is reported that the main purpose of his trip to the region is to connect Israel with the Persian Gulf countries, particularly Saudi Arabia, through a defense pact. This is why Israel remains the source of regional problems, including by attacking Syria, violating Palestinians' rights, and threatening Iran militarily.
One of the main purposes of Joe Biden's visit is the so-called deepening of Israel's integration in the region and moving forwards with the Abraham Accords, which is the pillar of normalization deals with Israel. But the latter has raised questions regarding Biden's foreign policies, as Israel itself seems to be the source of the problem in the region, from its atrocities against Palestinians to its continuous attacks on Syria and its repeated threats against Iran. In the op-ed piece, President Biden says the U.S. helped end the 2021 war on Gaza, but fails to condemn Israel for its atrocities and violation of Palestinian rights. Biden also proudly mentions the U.S.'s $4 billion support of Israel. But what does all this demonstrate about the U.S.'s stance on Palestinians who have been subject to Israeli brutality for years now?
Well, the issue of the United States and Israel is a burning issue right now, and the U.S. has acted in a hypocritical way where Russia has attacked special military operation in Ukraine to denazify it, and we know what Nazis are. So, and yet So the U.S. has spent $40 or $60 billion arming these countries, letting all those Ukrainian youth be killed who were forced into fighting Russia. And yet, with respect to Gaza, 8 months earlier, Israel unleashed a horrible attack on Gaza, and the U.S. hummed and hawed, tried to sort of say, maybe we'll calm things down. They didn't spend $40 billion to arm the resistance against Israel. And that is a term which I call tongue-in-cheek. I don't know whether you know the term. It's sort of a sarcastic term, because obviously the U.S. is not going to do that. But it's related to empire.
The U.S.'s one-sided stance on Israel is also clearly demonstrated in the Shirin Abu Akleh case, where it stopped short of reaching a definitive conclusion in her killing by Israeli troops, while all other investigations reached the conclusion that the regime troops did in fact murder her. Now, despite Israeli crimes, Washington seeks not only to integrate the regime further into the region, but also aims to advance its plans to upgrade defense cooperation between Israel and Arabs in the light of the Abraham Accords. And all this raises the question of whether the U.S. truly seeks justice and advocates for human rights, or it only claims to do so in order to move forward with its agenda.
The Russian president has issued a decree to speed up citizenship for all Ukrainians more than 4 months after the start of Moscow's offensive in the war-torn country. Vladimir Putin's decree also enables stateless persons permanently residing in Ukraine to obtain a Russian citizenship in a simplified manner. Putin had already fast-tracked citizenship for residents of two regions in south and southeast of Ukraine, which are totally or partially under Russia's control. Kiev has condemned the decree as worthless and proof of, quote, Putin's aggressive appetites. Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said the decree breaches Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity and is at odds with international law. He said Ukrainians do not need Russian citizenship, warning that attempts to impose it by force are doomed to failure. A similar decree in 2019 allowed the same simplified citizenship procedure for residents of Ukraine's eastern breakaway regions of Donetsk and Luhansk. A Tunisian opposition alliance renews calls for a boycott of a July 25th referendum on the country's new constitution, which is promoted by President Kais Saied. The opposition National Salvation Front says the referendum is illegal and unconstitutional and aims to legitimize a coup. The renewed call for the boycott of the constitution referendum comes despite Saied publishing an amended draft. The measure was an apparent attempt at warding off criticism after the original draft came under severe fire. Critics argued that it gave nearly unlimited powers to President's office. The draft constitution is the centerpiece of Saied's program to overhaul Tunisia's political system. His rivals say the text confirms fears that Saied seeks to reinstall an autocracy in the North African country. European countries have allowed millions of Ukrainian refugees into their territories since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war. Now the EU's border agency chief warns that the bloc must be prepared for more refugees from elsewhere as a result of the food crisis caused by the conflict. Aija Kalnaja says a new wave of migration is possible as the war has hampered grain export from Ukraine. Last month, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees also raised the alarm about the consequences of growing food crisis. Filippo Grandi said the number of displaced people globally would swell well beyond the record 100 million already counted if the crisis was not resolved. Russia has blamed Western sanctions for the global food crisis. The West, however, has accused Moscow of weaponizing food supplies. The ruling Conservative Party says the new UK Prime Minister to replace the outgoing Boris Johnson will be announced on September 5th. This as 11 hopefuls are currently vying for the job. Robert Carter, our man in London, brings us the latest on the bitter fight developing and how it could affect the UK.
It's your stories that matter most.
As the race for the leadership of the UK ruling Conservative Party heats up, the fight for who will become Britain's next Prime Minister turns ugly. with bitter exchanges, leaked dodgy dossiers, and attacks on rivals' policies, the contest could quickly turn into a large-scale brawl. A flurry of weekend announcements has put the total count of top job hopefuls at 11, a large number filled with big and small names. Rishi Sunak tops with the most Tory MP supporters so far, with pro-Brexit Trade Minister Penny Mordaunt coming in second. However, critics say a long drawn-out contest will deepen economic uncertainty amid a cost-of-living crisis.
What we're going to be faced with is more of the same. I mean, clearly, Boris Johnson brought the office of Prime Minister into further disrepute. And I just think that what we have before us are a number of candidates who are all committed to imperialism, all committed to neoliberalism. They're all warmongers at the end of the day. So we're just kind of rearranging the deck chairs rather than actually making any significant difference. It's a case of sort of parliamentary parlour games, really, rather than any meaningful change.
Onlookers also fear that the race is full of candidates who have a track record of concerning policymaking.
Priti Patel in particular, very close to the Zionist entity, had unofficial visits when she was on a ministerial tour when Theresa May was the Prime Minister and indeed got sacked as a consequence of that. It was Boris Johnson that brought her back in. But, you know, I mean, you just got to go through all the runners and riders. I mean, they've all got a very sort of checkered history, to say the least. At the end of the day, they're Conservatives and, you know, they support a system which has actually impoverished millions of people in this country.
It's not yet clear who's going to come out on top in this race. However, one thing we do know for sure is that the next Prime Minister of the entire country is going to be decided by a minority group, paying Conservative Party members, much to the frustration of the majority electorate who won't have a chance to say who the next Prime Minister will be. Robert Carter, London.
Well, that's your world news for now. Stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The super terrorists bid to whitewash the unpardonable crime of the illegal Zionist regime in killing veteran Al Jazeera correspondent Shirin Abu Aqile in Jenin, occupied Palestine last May, is nothing but a clumsy attempt by the U.S. on the pretext of so-called investigation to try to deflect attention of the world public opinion from its own complicity in Israel's terrorist activities, says Kayhan International staff writer in an article published under the heading Crude U.S. Attempt to Absolve Israeli Regime of Abu Aqile's Murder. Here's the details. The super terrorist bid to whitewash the unpardonable crime of the illegal Zionist regime in killing veteran Al Jazeera correspondent Shirin Abu Aghele in Jenin-occupied Palestine last May 11th is nothing but a clumsy attempt by the U.S. on the pretext of so-called investigation to try to deflect attention of the world public opinion from its own complicity in the Zionist regime's terrorist activities. Surely, the Americans cannot disapprove eyewitness accounts of the murder in broad daylight of this famous female Palestinian Christian journalist known for her exposure of Israeli regime brutalities. These eyewitness accounts have also been confirmed by investigations led by independent organizations and media outlets, which have concluded that the murderous Israeli troop deliberately aimed his shot at the unprotected part of her head, despite the fact that Shirin Abu Aghele, with a professional camera in her hand, was wearing the bulletproof vest inscribed "Press" in bold letters. Abu Aghele's tragic death, followed by violence at her funeral in the church by Israeli regime troops who attacked aggrieved Christian and Muslim Palestinian people, sent shockwaves across the region, drawing worldwide condemnation. The United Nations and the European Union, among others, despite their awe of the U.S., had to call for a full investigation into what has been described as a deliberate murder in cold blood. It is obvious the U.S. cannot succeed in its crude game in view of its blind and unequivocal support, both financial and political, of the past 7 decades for the Zionist entity. As a matter of fact, the crux of the chronic question of occupied Palestine and prolongation of the plight of the oppressed people is the illogical support of the U.S. and the West for the unabated crimes of the Zionist regime and its frequent acts of terrorism, which have now spread to Syria and Lebanon as well, coupled with blatant threats against the Islamic Republic of Iran. Unfortunately, the UN has turned a blind eye towards these dangerous developments. This shows the hypocrisy of the West, especially of the US, in manipulating the world body, while wrongly claiming to be an advocate of human rights, which it is definitely not, as is evident by Washington's strike of state terrorism around the world, in addition to the organized terrorizing of its own black-skinned citizens of African origin. Amazingly, Joe Biden's administration from day one of the killing of Shirin Abu Aghele was calling for an investigation, not to determine the identity of the killers, but to give the Zionists a clean chit. This is what Washington has eventually done, with the U.S. State Department recently saying that its security coordinator had concluded Abu Aghele was not targeted but killed by unintentional gunfire from Israeli positions. This type of conclusion is a clear sign that the usurper and the super terrorist supports the terrorist acts of its poodles around the globe, whether in Palestine or in Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, and the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and since you're still in holiday mood after celebrating Eid al-Adha or the Feast of Sacrifice yesterday, let us listen to a mind-stimulating statement from Imam Ali al-Naghi al-Hadi, peace be upon him, the 10th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The phrase Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, meaning in the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, is as near to the most exalted name of God as the iris is to the white of the eye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, respect for honor. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of respect for honor in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam has made some boundaries for every person, and we are bound to live in our limitations or limits, the limits that are set by the Islam. For example, we have mahram, the one like mother, sister, aunt. And similarly for the girls, it is the father, it's the brother, it is the brother or father, which is known as uncle. Obviously, for the brother of mother is also known as the uncle. So these are the maharim or mahram. In front of them, it is said that a lady, she is free to go without hijab. But for those who are non-mahram, which are known as the ones who are stranger in the Islamic terminology, as we use the word non-mahram, for them, she has to wear hijab. So this hijab, this veil, is for the man and woman both. Why? Because Islam talks about respect for honor. And this respect for honor means that you should not exceed the limits that are set by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. For example, someone who has the habit of womanizing or maybe having a dirty look on the others, we can say like sister, mother, or, you know, the ones who are non-mahram, even the ones who are non-mahram, this person is exceeding the limits that are set by Islam. He must not exceed these limits. Islam has set these limits where Islam has given the order to women to have to put on the veil. On the other hand, it is said for the man to lower your eyes, lower your gaze, and do not look at the non-mahram, and be in your limits, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of respect of honor in the Islamic lifestyle, and we said that there are the limits that are set by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and we must be careful when we are talking about these limits. And when we talk about the respect of honor, we have a narration from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, where the Prophet has said that لَيْسَ مِنَّا مَنْ خَانَ مُسْلِمًا فِي أَهْلِهِ وَمَالِهِ. And he said that he is not from us whoever betrays the other Muslim's family or the property. And this is very important, because if we do not belong to Prophet, then obviously who do we belong to? Being a Muslim, when we are looking at the Prophet to basically give a favor to us, and with all those actions that we have, with all those mistakes that we have, we are looking forward for the intercession of the Prophet, and we want him to be the Shafi, or does the Shafa'a for us. Therefore, if he says that he's not from us, who, for example, is having the dirty look at the others, we can say honor, or the woman who has the habit of womanizing, and who does not care, who does not respect the honor of the others, the woman of the others, then how can we go to paradise? How can we make ourselves a good person? How can we go towards the perfection? Whereas Islam has come to take us towards the perfection. Therefore, it is necessary, according to the Islamic lifestyle, if you want to have an Islamic lifestyle, if you want to become a role model, therefore, try to have the respect for other. And this is what Islam teaches us for. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. with the light.
A zoo in Mexico City celebrates the birthday of two very special residents, bringing cheers and excitement to visitors. Chinese pandas Xin Xin and Xuan Xuan have turned 35 and 33, becoming the oldest pandas in human captivity. China gifted their ancestors to Mexico back in 1975 to boost the relationships between the two countries. Later on, and thanks to the hard work of caretaker teams, eight cubs were born from the parents. Zoo officials say for them, learning the A to Z of panda care was a long journey.
The pandas living in Chapultepec, Xuan Xuan and Xin Xin, turned 35 and 33 years old, respectively. When their parents arrived, we didn't know much about pandas, so vets and biologists had to follow recommendations from those who took care of giant pandas in the People's Republic of China. From then on, we evolved. We found new and better diets and daily care practices such as vaccine administration or parasite removal. Then they started to breed, which was quite a success since it was the first panda that was born and which survived named Toy.
The birthday celebration has coincided with the zoo's 99th foundation anniversary. A panda's normal lifespan is estimated at about 15 to 20 years for those out in nature and about 30 years for the ones in human care. But the good news is, despite their old age, Xuan Xuan and Xin Xin are in perfectly good shape. A goat in the Pakistani city of Karachi has made the headlines for its not-so-ordinary looks. The animal owns strikingly long ears. Simba was only born last month and his ears have already reached the length of 54 centimeters. The goat's breeder, Muhammad Hassan Narejo, says he has approached Guinness World Records to see if Simba can be included as the greatest of all time, or the goat, for this peculiar feature. The kid is in the center of attention, so he receives all sorts of help to live a smoother life. This includes a special harness for his ears and daily religious rituals to wish him good health. The breeder says that by promoting Simba's image, he is trying to introduce Pakistan as a major goat breeding nation.
The sky is the limit for wind sports in Iraq's Kurdistan region as members of the paragliding team launched into the sunset. Tourists have also come to watch team members bravely run towards the edge of the cliff of Mount Asmar. They usually take off facing the west to catch the sunset and then glide down towards the grey green meadows. The windy landscape around Iraq's northeastern city of Sulaymaniyah is a hot spot for paragliding. Participants of the sport say it requires a lot of physical strength and mental concentration. Some say their favorite aspect of the activity is the intense silence when flying high above the ground. There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day since the menu largely includes local flavors. A young British artist has found an incredible way to create art using not pen or paper, but typewriter. Symbols and letters are turned into complex drawings by this 25-year-old's adept fingers, gaining him attention online. London-based James Cork, who studied architecture, used to draw portraits. But that all changed when he discovered his now signature tool, the typewriter, in 2014. He says the idea came to his mind when he came across Paul Smith, an artist from the 1920s who produced similar work. Initially, Cook thought it impossible, but he gave it a try. Now, after 8 years, he can draw complex images from Hollywood star Tom Hanks to the London Eye or the Millennium Bell. But while his works appear flawless to viewers, Cook says it never gets any easier and that it's always a challenge for him.
There's something really satisfying about kind of using this sort of limited palette of... You basically have about 44 keys on a typewriter on average. So you've got to kind of puzzle piece those letters, numbers, punctuation marks together to make a drawing.
Recently, online interest has encouraged Cook to pursue his passion. People donate their typewriters to Cook, who gives these machines a second life. He now has a collection of more than 40 typewriters dating from the early 20s.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Colombia's long hunt for a fabled Spanish ship, San Jose Galleon, that sank centuries ago, comes to an end. But the mission leads to two more nearby shipwrecks filled with treasures.
We have found two additional ships, one ship that is from the colonial period and another that, from the point of view of preliminary analysis, corresponds to the Republican period of our history. We also have related vessels, around a dozen similar boats, that will be located by our Navy.
The colonial-era vessels were found near Colombia's Caribbean port of Cartagena. A remotely operated vehicle reached 900 meters beneath to capture the shipwrecks and treasures inside them. San Jose Galleon sank in a deadly battle against English warships in 1708, taking with it billions in treasure. The Colombian president says the findings will be preserved and protected until extraction is done completely. The riches will then be displayed in museums.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there will be many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warn that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil.
In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Orthman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity. With soaring fuel prices, the importance of solar-powered vehicles is on the rise. Now a Kashmiri math teacher has gone viral for creating a car powered by solar energy. The car, which is fully covered with solar panels, uses sunlight to charge its battery. The vehicle also has a braking system that regenerates power to its batteries. The inventor of the car, Bilal Ahmed, says he has spent about $19,000 for his project and has not used external funds.
It was my dream to invent a solar car for the people of Kashmir. It took me 13 years to complete my dream. I'm thankful to the Almighty I succeeded in this project.
Bilal says he has built the car manually and without any automation. He hopes to put his fully automatic car into mass production to create jobs for local people.
Just like humans and animals, plants get sick too. But what do you do with an ill plant? An Indian man has found an answer to that. He has opened an emergency room only for plants in Amritsar, a city in India's Punjab state. A tax officer and his wife have set up the Pushpa Tree and Plant Hospital. In Pushpa, they have expert biologists and tree lovers on hand to provide the so-called sick patients with their essential nutrients. The clinic aims to treat any and every disease and even has an emergency vehicle on call for unhealthy trees around the city. The officer's wife says, just as we humans bleed, breathe and need cures, plants also bleed, breathe and need cures.
We provide approximately 32 various services for plants and trees, like if there's a nail in the tree, how to take out that nail. Deep poisoning of the trees. Yes, you heard it right. There are people who poison the trees. Again, if the tree is not bearing fruits, there's an attack of mealybugs or another insects. That's also cured here. If the trees or plants are dying and you're unable to take care of them, even that problem is sorted out.
Only a month into the hospital's operation, Rohit Mehra and his team of 20 volunteers have already received more than 300 queries. The hospital is also completely free of charge.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Criticism from the charity's food policy director came in response to a new United Nations report revealing that around 1 in 10 people worldwide went hungry last year. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading Broken Capitalist Food System Drives Soaring Global Hunger, Oxfam says. Stay tuned for more. Around 1 in 10 people went hungry last year in a world losing ground on its collective goal of ending all forms of hunger, a report released recently by United Nations agencies revealed, prompting sharp censure from a leading charity. As many as 828 million people experienced hunger in 2021, 150 million more than were affected just 2 years earlier, according to the latest State of Food Security and Nutrition in the World report, that is SOFI. The paper, a joint publication of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, the International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD, the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, the UN World Food Programme, WFP, and the World Health Organization, WHO, cited conflicts, climate-driven extreme weather events, and economic shocks as primary causes of hunger. The report also found that nearly 1 in 3 people worldwide last year were moderately or severely food insecure, meaning they lacked reliable access to enough affordable, nutritious food. It is deeply concerning that global hunger has been spiraling since 2019 and is now at such devastating levels around the world. Hanna Saarinen, Oxfam International's food policy head, said in response to the report. Saarinen continued, "This is happening not because of a shortage of food, but rather as a consequence of a broken food system further undermined by conflicts, the effects of the COVID pandemic, and worsening climate change. Despite this being a global food crisis, seeing millions of people going hungry today, food billionaires' wealth has reached a stratospheric levels, increasing by $382 billion just over the last 2 years," she added. "Our food system has for years perpetuated inequality, impoverished the small-scale farmers, and pushed millions of vulnerable people into hunger while wreaking havoc on the climate," she said. Saarinen said that while it is easy to blame today's food crisis on the crisis in Eastern Europe that began in February, long-standing political failure to address how we feed all the people in the world has made our food system susceptible to fragility and failure well before now. The UN report projects that nearly 670 million people, or around 8% of the world's population, will still be facing hunger at the end of this decade. These are depressing figures for humanity. We continue to move away from our goal of ending hunger by 2030, IFAD President Gilbert F. Hogbo said, referring to the 2030 Agenda of Sustainable Development, which was adopted by all UN member states 7 years ago. The ripple effects of the global food crisis will most likely worsen the outcome again next year, he added. Oxfam Sarinen warned that we will not break the vicious cycle of hunger and food inflation without addressing the deep inequalities fueling them. We must fundamentally reimagine a new, more just and sustainable global food system, one that serves the planet and millions of people, rather than a handful of big agribusinesses, she asserted. Noting the dramatic shortfalls in pledged funding for anti-hunger initiatives in places like East Africa, where tens